You're listening to the Overeaters Anonymous Mid-Peninsula podcast. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. For more information, please visit oamidpeninsula.org.
Here we go. You can go ahead, please, Joan.
Okay, thank you. Hi, my name is Joan. I'm a compulsive overeater, and the opinions I express are my own. I came into the rooms in 1973, which is over 50 years ago. I'm maintaining 49 and a half years of continuous abstinence. I'm only a 40-pound weight loser. I came into these rooms because I was insane, and I knew I had a problem with food. It wasn't, you know, I knew it. I did things that people didn't do, you know, the garbage eating, the freezer, everything. Going to Europe, eating out of a bag. Nobody knew me in Europe, but, you know, that's what I did. I was a secretive eater. Did not see me eat. I had three square meals a day, but behind the scenes, when I came in, I was reading books about famous people who kill themselves because I had all these suicidal ideations. I just couldn't live with myself anymore. Born in New York City, 51 years in Manhattan. So I'm 73, you can do the math, 70. And we had good program in those days, very strict, structured program. There was only gray sheet, and most of our literature was AA. It's only over the decades, you know, we got this OA literature. And my sponsor was an OA AA person, and I went to a lot of AA meetings. Not that I don't have a problem with booze, but I could equate, you don't take that first drink with it. You don't take that first compulsive bite, and that's what it means. My parents escaped Nazi Germany. I had one older brother, average household, not dysfunctional or anything. And I don't know why, but at 12 years old, I became very interested in food. I was normal weight, but somehow I saw what everybody ate and what I ate. I just was very conscious of food. That was started the obsession, but the compulsion only started when I was 17, I remember. I was a counselor, a junior counselor in a camp, and the counselors always got together after the kids were in bed. And I guess it's very much a human relations problem. You know, I couldn't relate my campers. They were just 13 and 14, and I was only 17. I just couldn't relate. You know, what's yours is yours, and what's mine is mine. Don't ask me for anything, and I won't ask you. And it was then I remember going behind the scenes when all the counselors got together on the shelves, when, you know, where they stored the food, ate, you know, quite a bit. Are you allowed to munch in foods here or not? Okay. All the carbon, the cookies, everything, there was, you know, packages, stuff my face, and then I would get together with the counselors. So that was the beginning of my compulsion. I had a boyfriend at the time. You know, I did well in school. I was a good kid. But, and that was this period of losing weight and gaining weight. You know, I would gain 10 pounds, lose 10 pounds. You know, until later, it's a progressive disease, going from a size 3, 5, 7, 9. And that freaked me out. I was very body conscious, just freaked me out because I knew I was doing stuff that other people didn't do. You know, who eats out of the garbage? Who volunteers to clean up the plates at somebody's party so you can eat what anybody left? It was insanity. And I knew I was insane, and I didn't know anybody who was like that. I got married at 22, right before I came into the program. My husband was a vegan, met him in college. He was 12 years older than me, very strict with, he was a jogger at the time. He was a vegan, was disciplined with his food, with his exercise, had his own apartment. And yeah, I wanted to get out of the, still living at home. I want to get out of the house and, you know, a good person. I married for the wrong reasons. I was so immature and heavily into my addiction. And I thought that would be an escape. You know, I could get what he has. Doesn't work like that. And in 1973, he showed me an article in one of the papers in New York. They talked about OA, if you have problems with food and you don't know what to do about it. And I went to my first meeting that night in New York City. And I identified with the people. They told things that I did. And I learned that I didn't have a thought or I didn't do anything that somebody else hadn't done with my food or my thinking. You know, to this day, I say sometimes, thank God my thoughts are not transparent, you know, because it's good. And I identified. And so I kept coming back. I got a sponsor in OAAA and worked the steps. Got on our hands and knees. We called our food plan in every day. Again, it was gray sheet. And I had a 6-month period of absence. And then and had gotten divorced in this time because I had no reason being in that marriage. It wasn't him. It was me. Too immature. I couldn't deal with it. I had a 6-month period of absence. I had a boyfriend. We went out 3 days. It was a holiday. Came home. We had been camping out. And it was only raw hamburger meat. I took that first compulsive bite. For me, it doesn't have to be carbohydrate. It could be anything, lettuce, whatever. Out of context, the first compulsive bite, and I was off to the races. And it took me, and I had the, you know, same sponsor. I did everything, got on my hands and knees. It took me months till I could get my abstinence back. So my higher power blessed me with a second abstinence. That was in June of 74, and I've been absent ever since. And during that time, I didn't know a lot of my friends in those days became teachers. I didn't want to be a teacher. So what do I study? Dietetics. I have a degree in dietetics. Okay, I'm very food, you know, the diets, the food plans, everything. And so in the big book where it says self-knowledge availed me nothing. It availed me nothing. And I remember this time my husband saw me gain weight. But he, you know, he didn't see me compulsively eat because I didn't do it when people saw me. And I went to, he sent me to a shrink or whatever it was. It was a psychiatrist, a psychologist. And that's when I first started going, you know, to these doctors. And in one time, I got so bad, he said, he liked to do yoga and I got into yoga. I went to a yoga retreat in the Bahamas for a month. I lived in a tent to get a certificate in yoga. And you know, this in the big book, it says, oh, you can go anywhere, Alaska or wherever, other side of the earth, you'll find an Eskimo or somebody who will have what you want. And, you know, again, another geographic. And I remember them saying, does anybody, you know, they made the breads the night, 2 a.m. in the morning for the following morning and they asked for volunteers. Of course, my hand goes up. So I got what I needed, you know, 2 a.m. in the morning. And they also, in the Bahamas, you know, about a half a mile down, there was a Hilton Hotel or something. So went over there so I could get what I needed and when. Again, you didn't see myself. You didn't see me eat. And also, you know, sometimes I couldn't even do the asanas. So anyway, I finished college and I was supposed to go internship in New York Hospital, which is a very prestigious internship. They accepted 9 people for the year course and to get your registered dietitian, become registered dietitian. I lasted 5 weeks out of the 9-month program. I ate my way out. The coffee, the food, I just couldn't handle dealing with this and other people's foods and wants. So I ate my way out. I told them I have a problem. I need to leave. And they said, oh, a lot of people have problems. The internship will send you to a therapist. I said, no, it goes beyond that. You know, it was a, you know, something to do with food. And they said, we'll help you. But I knew it wasn't the answer. So I left. And at that point, that's when my husband found, and I was home, but found OA. And so that's what it was kind of like. And over 50 years in program, a lot happens. By the way, today I do the same things I did 50 years ago. I have a sponsor. My sponsor has a sponsor. I pray. I meditate. I have sponsees. You know, read the big book. Go on meetings. And you know, it's a day at a time program. And I think one of the most important concepts is, you know, one day at a time. When I came in, they said, this has to be the most important thing in your life without exception. And I said, oh, it is. I don't have a life, you know, or I wouldn't have a life. I'm here today. I'm living on borrowed time. That's how I look at it. I remember once going to dinner at my parents, and my husband said, you know, we have a problem on our hand. And they looked at him. They said, your daughter's thinking of committing suicide. So now where did that come from? My poor parents, you know, they were floored. And at that point, they sent me to a neurologist. I was on Elavil just for about a week, you know, to overcome this depression. You know, it didn't help. So then when I got abstinent, I took a bookkeeping job. Somebody's willing to train me in bookkeeping. So I did that for 10 years. Eventually, I got back into sort of my profession. I became a school dietitian. I was at for 16 years. You know, monitoring what the kids had breakfast and lunch in New York and ordering the food, the supplies, responsible for the help. So that's what I did. And in 1980, this was about 13 years after being absent, I met someone and we got married. And, you know, we celebrated 37 years of marriage. And I'm an exerciser. I've always been. I met him bike riding, and I'm a swimmer. I just, you know, I think that was part of helping me relieve this anxiety or this energy that I spent on food. You know, it was just which is fine. You know, better, a healthy way of doing things. And so we were married. I chose not to have kids. I don't have kids. And I just remember the trips to Europe and eating out of garbage bags and, you know, the whole thing. I'm sure you all know that. And in Gray Sheet, then, you know, we could eat unlimited gum, unlimited, you know, gum, coffee, and sweetener. And we did. And it was totally acceptable. But in time, and I know many other people who I came in the rooms with, we had to give all that up. You know, 10 packs of gum a day is not really sane. 20 cups of coffee, you know, a little nervous on the bike. So I had to give all of that up. And, you know, they have a saying too, don't let what you get from the program take you away from the program. And everything I have today is because of this program and staying absent one day at a time. I can't put the cart before the horse. You know, people take inventories, say this and that, and they're not absent, and that doesn't work for me. I could only find a higher power by being absent. You know, when all else fails, follow directions. I followed directions and binging my head off one day and then getting absent, following a food plan. That was, you know, God sent, because I could not do that with a degree, with therapy, I tried religion, yoga, you know, nothing helped until I came to these rooms, started working with, you know, the steps and the big book and giving service. And 1945, I had a stroke, nothing, not of my own, you know, I'm as small as I am now and absent and everything, something genetic. And, you know, it was a program that got me through, my God squad. Got me through, and it's gotten me through with a lot of things. We had a place in Connecticut, and we commuted for weekends from New York to Connecticut. And then we decided to get a place, leave New York, have Connecticut and Arizona. And 3 years ago, my husband was diagnosed with acute myeloid leukemia, and he was healthy, athletic, thin, everything. And that's a very aggressive cancer. And he was 73 at the time, and he had a bone marrow transplant at Mayo. here in Phoenix, and he's doing quite well. But I was so surprised because total life change for me. Every day going to Mayo, he was in the hospital 3 weeks, we brought him there 3 times a week. It's about a 50-minute, 45-minute drive, and I really felt I was there. Now, that's not the old me. When my mother was sick and living in New York, I was in Arizona. I took care of a lot of things, visit her. And I got a compliment from my brother who lives in Jersey and said, well, you really got her all the programs and things she needed.
Five minutes to go.
Okay. So, certain things, it's amazing because I still have low self-esteem. I don't think I'm that bright, yada, yada, yada. But I showed up. And that was because of this program. And, one of the things is that God, I can handle anything in 24 hours of time frame. If I think of tomorrow, I'm finished. God does not, my higher power does not give me the strength to do that. And the thing I've, time, things I must learn, things I must earn. And I think experience is the great teacher because even to this day, fast forward 50 years, I'm learning a lot, about myself. And I'm in communities. I was in two communities, now I'm in one, and the give and the take and service. And I'm a friendly person, but I'm an isolate. But I'm friendly. And they said this is a human relations problem. I truly believe that because I've had to open up and I want to be with part of the network and be with people. So I've got to do my share of service and having people over. And, it's life on life's terms. So with my husband, I didn't know he would live or not. For 67 days, he couldn't be alone. He needed 24/7. And I was at 24/7. Except, I have friends come over for about an hour and a half, so at least I could go swimming or shop or something. It really takes a community as it does in this program. It takes a community. My God squad is there. I make my calls. My sponsors call me. This program is ongoing. And the last few years have not been easy. I'm not crazy in being in Arizona. I love my Connecticut home, but more and more I'm learning life on life's terms, and it's how I accept it and deal with it that will get me through. And I did study a little Buddhism, and I will share this. Acceptance and having peace of mind is accepting wholeheartedly whatever arises, having given up the idea that things should be other than what they are. And I say that a lot, and I go swimming and I pray the whole time. Repetitive prayer has gotten me through so many things, and I memorize things from the big book, and I say them a lot. And they say in the program too, stay green, green things grow. Absolutely. Do not forget, who I am, what I am, and where my salvation lies. First and foremost, I'm a compulsive overeater who cannot take that first compulsive bite if I want to stay alive. And so challenges are happening now. Challenges getting older, not fun, taking care of wills and what to do. I have a cat, just a lot of stuff. Don't have a big family, one brother, and that's it. So but it's just showing up, fessing up. And another quote is strength is courage is not having the strength. It's going on when you don't have the strength to do things. That's what courage is. I'm full of slogans. I love to, talk about slogans. And he who is not happy with a little is he who is not satisfied with a little is satisfied with nothing. Because if somebody wants more and more, they can never be satisfied. So I'm learning to be satisfied with a little, count my blessings. I do get my hands and knees and again, I'm not proud of always my thoughts. Thank God my thoughts are not transparent. but come a long way. I'm not what I used to be. What do they say? I'm not what I used to be. I'm not what I could be. I'm not what I should be. But for the God, grace of God, I'm not what I once was. That person would not be alive today. So I will stop with that. Thank you for all being there, and I'd love to hear from you.
Thanks.
If you've enjoyed listening to the Overeaters Anonymous podcast, hit the like button and subscribe to receive future episodes. If you are looking for a meeting online or in person, visit www.oamidpeninsula.org.